In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Mentally Yours, Metro.co.uk's weekly mental health podcast. I'm Yvette, and this week we're chatting to Dr. Gobindajit Kaur. She's a clinical psychologist and the founder of Seek Your Mind. We're going to be finding out about the charity and what support it offers.
It was around 2015 that it began from Instagram. It actually began from my husband, if I'm really honest. He was like, well, you're a psychologist and, you know, I'm just learning about mental health, being married to you. You know, people would really benefit. And I was like, oh, really? If I'm honest, I was like, oh, gosh, okay. And so, yeah, a few years after that, I just started an Instagram page on a summer afternoon. I remember it vividly. And it kind of, and then I've got sort of colleagues and friends on board who share the same vision. So it just, it snowballed. I don't think any of us would have expected what's happening right now with Seek Your Mind.
That's fantastic. What exactly does the charity do?
So our vision is really just to it's about mental health in the Sikh community. Originally, I think we would say something along the lines of educating the Sikh community, but it's more than that really, because it's not just that they don't have a knowledge base about mental health. It's having the appropriate conversations. It's introducing it in a way that's less shaming, less stigmatizing. And it's sharing knowledge in a really accessible way. So we offer so many services now. We've been really fortunate to get like kind of donations and funding in various ways. So we offer a telephone line, and that started because of the National Lottery funding last year. I think it was the year before, even now, which we've kept going without the funding. And we've offered free therapy as well for about 60, just over 60 people, I think it was in the end.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And we offer virtual spaces, virtual groups as well. So we've got something running for students in collaboration with another organization called Tharaki. And we've also got a women's space that occurs fortnightly. And we're also the only organization that I'm aware of that offers a mental health and Sikhi course. So it's bringing like faith and mental health, and particularly the Sikh faith, together to really kind of increase, you know, to really make it more accessible to people that probably wouldn't access statutory services.
And is it aimed at people of all ages? I think maybe I was thinking, because you said it sort of started on Instagram, it might be towards younger people, but is it sort of all ages?
Yes, I mean, it is open for all ages. Pre-pandemic, when we were also sort of functioning, we offered like workshops, drop-in kind of support at local Sikh gurdwaras. So we have done that, and we actually see, and you're right in saying about that actually social media is probably more favoured towards the younger generation. I think it's kind of the like 20-ish to maybe even early 40s. So we know that with that, having lived the pandemic life, we've been very much virtual. It has been like a niche audience, but we're getting out there again. And we know that when we have in the past, we've had older generations who, because we were consistently attending certain places, they were actually, you know, slowly, they were feeling more confident to come up and speak to us about some of their concerns or just wanting to find out a bit more about mental health.
Mm. So what do you do specifically within the charity?
So I'm a clinical psychologist by profession. So at the moment, there's three of us as trustees and we do a bit of everything. We started in a very different way from probably most charities, and we started in a very clinical way in terms of like the practical stuff. What can we do? How can we do it like clinically? Because that's where our expertise is. And now, many years on, having formed as an official charity, we've recruited an operations manager and a service manager. So you know, we were really thinking a bit more about the processes, the like trust, the charity kind of organization, and how to make this long term. My husband has a great analogy that he shared many years ago, and he keeps repeating it to me. But actually, it's instead of providing the water, we need to get the well ready, really. And so that's our long term vision. So at the moment, we do a bit of everything, from sort of organizing like the telephone line, the rota, to kind of more like risk and suicide training, to answering Instagram messages and attending sort of events and workshops. So we're all jack of all trades, I think, at the moment.
Mm. I'm glad you mentioned the telephone line in there, because I just noticed that on your website when I was kind of having a look about you. Can you tell us a bit about that and what sort of help it offers?
So all of our volunteers are trained and we're open from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. every evening. And we've also got a live chat on our website, because we know that it can be difficult to speak on the phone sometimes, depending on, you know, who you live with, who you're around, and that kind of privacy and confidentiality. And we get a number of different types of calls. So we get calls for just a listening ear. Sometimes we've had calls previously where people have wanted to be signposted for to access like therapy or more local support, because these calls are coming from all over the UK and sometimes even worldwide. You know, we've had emails and calls from like India, Malaysia, New Zealand. Like it's incredible, really. So we just try and support people how we can. So it's I suppose there isn't an ideal call or an average caller. It's really sort of the support that people might need and really just giving us a call. Because I think now we've been around sort of fairly long enough that people know that we are, you know, planning to be around. This isn't just a fad or, you know, a year long project. We really do want to kind of be accessible, although we're mindful that we are still a small group of volunteers, hence the limited time for the sort of telephone line. But I think hopefully in the future, if we get more funding, we would like to expand that.
Mm. But to be clear with the phone line, it's more of a helpline and support line rather than a crisis line. Is that right?
Absolutely, yes. We are really mindful of just kind of reiterating that to our callers. And if, you know, obviously that doesn't mean that we don't or not, we do. We have had calls where callers have really needed that support, and, you know, we have contacted the agencies that needed to be contacted to make sure our callers are safe. So, you know, we do know the processes. And obviously working in the NHS, as most of us, or a few of us rather, do in the team, we've got that kind of understanding. So it's, you know, I suppose one of the reasons I should have mentioned of it earlier is we wanted more of the support for the Sikh community that was like regulated in a way that you know, our professional roles are on the line in this work as well. Because actually, obviously, if we do anything that doesn't quite sit right or is incorrect, people can complain, and there is a process, and often you don't get that kind of regulation in some charities. So we did want to sort of be that as well for the community, to make sure that there are consequences if you don't offer the thing that you're saying, or if you're inappropriate and unprofessional.
So it's information and support line, and it's 0333 210 1021. And also loads of information on the website, which is seekyourmind.com. What kind of issues do people come to you with, to the charity, not just the helpline, but in general when they're approaching you?
It really varies. I mean, we've had sort of people wanting support with particular diagnosis because their family members have been diagnosed. Lots of relationship issues. So whether that's kind of, you know, sibling, partner, in-laws, the whole kind of system. We've had difficulties that people have shared with, you know, I suppose marriage, you know, marriage choices. And we've got an event coming up as well this week, around living with your in-laws. So we try and shape our services to what we notice is coming through. But there's definitely a wide mix. You know, we've had, you know, more contact than I do in my NHS role, as you can imagine, really, of people, the wider family calling to ask for help for a particular family member. And that's, you know, it's always really interesting because I suppose you can't really have that in the NHS because there's many gatekeepers before you get to services, really. So I think that makes us quite unique, that people can call, they can share their difficulties or, you know, try and understand what's going on for one of their family members that they care about and try and think about how they could support them, you know, and often the difficulty is that person might not be ready, and that's a real struggle sometimes. But there are things that, you know, people close by can do, maybe can have those conversations, can offer that non-judgmental space. So it really, really varies in terms of cause. We've got people with sort of anxiety, people who feel lonely, grief, you know, work-related stress, physical health issues, you know, somebody with like a chronic illness, so how to manage that. So there's no sort of one size fits all. It is really everything, and we welcome everything. You know, if we can kind of support someone just by being available and listening to them and even signposting them to, because we have quite extensive information about what's available and across the UK, which we're constantly building on, we can signpost them to something more local if that's going to be helpful too.
That's great. And it's great to hear that you support the family and friends too, because that's so vital. Especially when sort of people are in crisis, or well, even if they're not, they're sort of dealing with a long-term health issue. I'm sorry, this is a very clunky question, but I feel I should ask it. Why is there a need for a mental health charity that supports the Sikh community specifically?
Well, I mean, it's a good question, really, because, you know, we're often clunked into the category of South Asians, and I'm not a fan. I understand why it exists, but I also know that it's not a homogenous group of people. Actually, there's so many differences, you know, faith, just cultural beliefs being just a few. And so, I noticed, I suppose, that in my role in the NHS, and I work in a really diverse area in Birmingham, that that there weren't many Sikh. Actually, there was nobody on my caseload about 5 years ago, and that is changing, which is good. But I was curious, where are people going then, if it's not to like statutory services and there's nothing else out there? So it just felt really appropriate to offer something that is specifically for Sikhs. But that does not mean, and has never meant, that we, you know, if somebody else from any other culture or faith group were to contact us, and they have, that we would offer them the same service. But I suppose it's kind of tailored, because we do think about that kind of link between culture and faith and mental health. So there are lots of people who contact us, lots of our followers who say, actually, I want to think a bit more about spirituality and my faith in relation to my mental health problems and in relation to kind of like meaning to life. And, you know, I suppose it makes it a little bit more individualized. And I think, you know, we couldn't offer that if we offered it to every single person. You know, I don't think we would offer as good a service, if I'm honest.
It's really interesting. And I'm so glad that you also work in the NHS, because I think you have some very interesting thoughts in terms of my next questions. How do you think that other mental health charities and the NHS in general can better support the Sikh community?
I think there's definitely a change kind of in the tide, as it were. I think people that services are trying to, there's a lot more, unfortunately, due to the anti-racism, the Black Lives Matter movement. I do think often it is those really, really difficult situations that trigger a lot of change, or at least in the short term, but hopefully that's continuing. people are thinking a little bit more about what needs to be asked in an assessment or a session, rather than having kind of Western models that are kind of the way to do it. That doesn't work. It doesn't work. It doesn't always even work for non ethnic minority populations. So we need to really think about the individual in front of us. And I do think the NHS and other organisations are thinking about it now. And are trying to, there's in Birmingham at least, there's projects that are coming into play that are about linking up with like charity organisations, with non-statutory services, knowing that the NHS cannot do everything, because it's A, it's unrealistic, and B, it's severely underfunded. So it's recognising the limitations, but doing something helpful about it. So often in sort of my team meeting, we talk about, well, if we're not appropriate for whatever reason, there's always another option. So, you know, I think there is, I feel like having been in this profession for over 10 years, I feel like there is definitely more conversations about the NHS and its ability to do everything or not, rather, to be able to do everything and where else we can signpost people to and how we can work in a kind of pathway rather than it's one size fits all.
And it's great to know that there are more specialised charities and groups like yourselves. Because it does feel like we are quite lucky in the UK. It seems to me sometimes doing this podcast that there's loads of mental health charities. And sometimes I think, oh, gosh, that's a bit strange. Why do we have so many? But it's great to have really specialised ones, especially in, I can see the value in this case. And like, just for me, I've got a real soft spot for Bipolar UK, because obviously they sort of specialise in my one. but for different people, it'll be their own sort of things. It's difficult, isn't it, when it comes to the NHS, because I think when you have that first point of contact with your GP, that can be a bit sort of potluck sometimes. So it's great to know that there are sort of other places that they can be signposted to.
Absolutely. I think, sorry, but I was just going to say that we're in really fortunate times in some ways. I know not in many others, but there's something about for us, you know, the access to a clinical psychologist this quickly, like you pick up the phone and you can speak to one, is kind of unheard of. We're normally like, you know, secondary, tertiary services. You wouldn't get to somebody as quickly, a psychologist at least. And so we're really sort of aware of, you know, that bit. And whilst we can't offer everything, you know, often the gatekeepers can really prevent therapy because of like notions around who therapy is really for, how someone can benefit, whether they're psychologically minded, you know. And I'm not saying therapy is the answer to everything. It really isn't. But you know, I've noticed that having that space, even if, you know, it's a different version, it's not therapy, it's like having a space for someone who is trained to listen, to help you make sense of what's going on, is invaluable.
I have to admit, I'm sort of fairly ignorant in terms of stigma in sort of when it comes to mental health and the Sikh community, because I just know sort of more to do with my own sort of families, that the older generations have a much harder time talking about mental health. You know, some of them just flat out refuse to talk about it, even if they actually have long-term conditions. And then the younger ones, it seems to be going in a, you know, much more positive direction. People my own age and younger seem to be sort of much happier. Could you tell us a little bit about, I know it's hard to generalize because every family's different, every person's different, but what's it like in terms of the Sikh community when it comes to talking about mental health and getting help for mental health issues?
Again, I think now it's changing. It's still not perfect, but sort of historically, I mean, the narrative was, oh, we don't have the word for depression in Punjabi or in this community. We don't have X and Y language, or we're really hard to reach. But actually, I don't think that's been the full story. We do obviously have words. They're just not the, you know, there isn't an English equivalent, but they still describe a similar experience. And I think the community has never really been hard to reach. Actually, it's been easy to ignore in some cases, because there's such a narrative around like Asian populations looking after their own. And so, you know, input hasn't been needed from services, when actually I would disagree. Actually, the support was really needed, but it's just not been offered, or it's not even been. I think a lot of people that call us in particular, access us for support, want to know how to navigate the system. They want to know at like pretty much, what do you say to your GP to show that you know there's X service that you could access, but they haven't offered it to you? And so some of our conversations have been about just, you know, increasing confidence and informing our followers and our service users to say, you know, use those kind of buzzwords really to get referrals. So I'm not denying the stigma and the kind of taboo issues around mental health, you know, because that there are, I think they're there for every community. So it's not just kind of the Asian or Sikh community, but I think it's a bit more complex than that. You know, I think generations, as you said, Yvette, like the younger generations, they're in a different place. But the reason they're in a different place is because, I mean, I'm sure you're aware of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, our generations before us. So I spoke to my dad about this kind of semi-recently. So his parents were all about kind of getting you to this country or a country that was safe, that was, you know, you could think about the future. And then he was all about, and my mom, him and that generation were all about kind of education, educating your children and get financial stability and working really hard. And it's only because of those generations can we, this generation, now do the work of like self-actualization, of really kind of finding meaning in this life and what we're about. But we couldn't have done that straight away because the generations before us, you know, that they did those specific things. So I suppose it's thinking about it like that, like my grandparents and my parents really had no capacity to think about mental health. They just couldn't. It was kind of surviving at some points. So I think, you know, if we think about it like that, you know, we're in a really lucky position, which means that now hopefully the younger generations, our generations, can help inform like the wider system, so they can help educate their grandparents, they can help have those kind of conversations, they can notice when their grandparents, you know, changes in their mood or things that might have an impact on their mental health, and hopefully kind of spread awareness in that way.
That's fascinating. I'd also like to go back briefly to what you kind of touched on earlier about the spiritual side of things, because we haven't really talked much about that side of things on Mentally Yours, but I think it's really interesting that you kind of mentioned it in there, because, you know, if you do have a faith, that must be a source of kind of strength and comfort when you're sort of dealing with any illness, or if a family member or friend is dealing with something like that. So it's really interesting that that's kind of an approach that you're sort of open to and taking, because it probably sounds obvious, but that's not included in the NHS. You know, when you talk to the doctor, it is very much just, you know, pills, therapy. No one ever says, oh, have you thought about maybe going to church or something, or the mosque or whatever.
Yes, definitely. I mean, you know, I think the psychological world, at least where I'm standing from, is changing slightly, or a niche or a part of it is, because we're trying to incorporate the mind, body and spirit. That's slowly happening. It's going to take a while. There's a lot more conferences on spirituality. I and my colleague did some teaching for the University of Birmingham recently on trauma and spirituality. So it's definitely a field that's more present, which is great. But yes, I do think we need to ask those questions, just like we ask about trauma histories. You know, we're very problem orientated, but we really need to think also about the kind of the factors that help. There's a plethora of research around, you know, the protective factors of faith, religion, spirituality, whatever you want to call it, because it varies for everyone. So it's a shame that we don't ask, but it has a huge, you know, there's so much evidence that suggests that it can be so helpful, which isn't denying that it can also be traumatic. There are sort of, you know, things such as religious trauma and using spirituality to bypass your problems. But actually, more often than not, it seems to be helpful.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Well, from one big topic to another huge one, which is more negative, I'm afraid. But I want to talk briefly about the pandemic, because I mean, how can I not, unfortunately? In terms of mental health, how has that affected you, your colleagues, and the people that you support, would you say?
Yeah, yes, and I took a deep breath in.
Sorry.
Working predominantly in the NHS, that is stressful, as you can imagine. It's stressful because the pandemic has been over the news. It's not just a physical health issue, it's absolutely a mental health issue, and there's so many more difficulties arising as a result of what we're all been through and going through. But sort of personally, I mean, I've struggled at times with working from home. I've really struggled. I've noticed and learned something about myself. I need to be in a team of people and I need to be seeing people regularly. But I think, you know, I can only speak for my profession, but I think we have quite a lot of safeguards in place with regular supervision. And I have, you know, many, many like venues to go down. But also my own like spirituality and faith has been a huge part of understanding or making sense of what the pandemic is about in sort of the lens of faith. And I think it was last year or the year before we actually did some research as part of Seek Your Mind and looked at Sikhs and how they cope during the pandemic. And it was just revitalizing that it was very much, you know, the strengths and the resilient factors that the people were talking about and how faith was a huge part of that. So for me, and that was early on into the pandemic, I was I think I got a lot from that, and that's currently under review for publication. So hopefully we can share that as soon as it's out. But it showed me that, you know, whilst we're not in control of lots of things, there are other, you know, and I think it's really important to focus on what you are in control of. So even your day-to-day life, you know, because I had COVID a couple of years ago, again, pretty much at the beginning of the pandemic. And whilst that was a really scary time, I think, again, you know, my faith and my kind of support network really helped in managing sort of how I coped with that. So while it is incredibly stressful, I think for me personally, I've had many things that I can lean on to help. It's never ending though. So yes, it's the pandemic right now, but you look at the world and what's going on even right now, and it's just, it feels like it's like a tsunami of bad news almost. And I suppose for me to feel safe, and you know, I need to think about what's happening in my life here right now, what I can do, what I can't do, you know, what control I have over the things I can do, and it being meaningful on a day-to-day basis. Because actually, if I think more about globally, I think I would struggle.
Well, I love some of the things you said in the end there about, you know, thinking about what you can do and what you can't do each day, because that does kind of lead me on, I think, to my next question, which is, how can we help ourselves and our loved ones when it comes to mental health? Because that seems to me like some very good advice. You know, if you're feeling overwhelmed, rather than sort of think about, yeah, the big picture, for me it helps to think about sort of things one day at a time. And as you said, you know, what have I got control of and what don't I have control of, and that side of things. But what are your thoughts?
Absolutely. Like I think it's so important, isn't it, to kind of prevent feeling as overwhelmed, or can't maybe prevent it completely, is to focus on the here and now, because our minds are so powerful at going back and forth to the past, to the future, what's going to happen, what's happened, and just really be in touch with how we feel, because otherwise it's a bit like a roller coaster and all of a sudden you wake up and you think, I'm just completely at breaking point. So just acknowledging some of those difficult thoughts and feelings, and hopefully, you know, having this space, whether it's one family member or a friend or somebody or even a helpline, where you can talk through some of what's going on for you, and engaging in, like, I suppose it's similar to that, engaging in the here and now. It's how do you feel in this moment? And when we're not really very connected, I think we as humans are not very connected to our body. And so even coming back into your body to acknowledge and use that as a grounding tool, so as a way to be more present. Because there is so much, and there's constantly so much, even pre and I'm sure post pandemic, that's out of our hands, that we have very little, control over. So it's really important to focus on yourself, because in the Sikh faith, and I'm really, I should be more au fait with other faiths as well, but it's very much like you come into this world alone and you die alone. So it's not about being selfish. It's about actually, you do need to look after yourself, because if it's important, and in the Sikh faith it is, to help others, you can only do that when you're looking after yourself. and being committed to living a life that is based on like your values, that is meaningful, that you feel like actually, yeah, you want to get up for each day.
So this is goodbye from Mentally Yours. So go away, enjoy your day, get on with all your chores from Mentally Yours.
If you've been affected by any of the issues we've discussed today, you can give the Samaritans a ring on 116 123.
If you like Mentally Yours, you can also find us on Twitter. We're at MentallyYRS. We also have a lovely Facebook group, which is just called Mentally Yours.
And if you really liked us, you could do us a massive favour and give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It's much appreciated, helps us, you know, continue doing what we're doing. So please do rate and review and check back in next week for more Mentally Yours.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.